War Room, Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's 28 November, year of our Lord 2019. It's Thanksgiving Day, episode 50. We're at the Breitbart Embassy on Thanksgiving and live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, on Salem Broadcast Radio Network, americasvoice.news, and thanks to Chris Ruddy and the great team at Newsmax. We're on Newsmax TV, the fastest growing cable operation, I think, in the country now, in 70 million homes. Really want to thank the folks at Newsmax for doing this. This is War Room Impeachment. We're here every day, 7 days a week, until the day after the acquittal of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. It's a historic moment, not just for the United States, our country, our citizens, but also for the world. Everything is tied together, inextricably linked. And we're going to talk about a little bit about that today. On Thanksgiving Day, we should be giving thanks in a day of gratitude. We're going to talk a little bit about that. The rest of the show, we're going to actually arm you for your visits with your friends, your relatives, your acquaintances, your colleagues, as you go about going to Thanksgiving dinner, having a reunion with all your friends and family, and also later in the evening and over the weekend. We're going to be doing shows, obviously, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But today we wanted to arm you. The Guardian newspaper had a great piece about, I guess, the six or seven biggest lies or misrepresentations or misconstructions of the Republicans. And we're going to counter that today. I've got Raheem Kassam, who is Nigel Farage's wingman at UKIP and running the masterminds and backs of Brexit. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. Greg Manns. Greg was the communications director for the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania. And without Pennsylvania, Donald J. Trump would not be the 45th president of the United States. Greg did a fantastic job with Dave Urban and all the team up there that delivered Pennsylvania. Jason Miller is off for the Thanksgiving holidays. I want to start first, Raheem. Your family came from India to Tanzania?
Yep.
And then from Tanzania to London.
Yep.
And I think what's extraordinary is you're obviously your heritage and your ethnicity is Indian, but you are one of the most British folks I know, and really a leader of the right wing part of the of this kind of populist nationalist revolt in the United Kingdom, which has been so rejected by the Tory Mandarins. I mean, Nigel Farage in the Brexit Party, which is now called, and you were on the masterminds of Brexit, could have a 100-seat majority if they just pulled together. But the Mandarins there are kind of the elites of that country, are so terrified by being a nationalist party, so terrified about being a populist party, they would rather even risk election or a smaller majority than to do that. And remember, Thanksgiving Day really came from, it's what we say in one of the backgrounds of why we're having this debate now about this impeachment, about we're not an imperial power, we're a revolutionary power. And when you see Fiona Hill, and when you see Ambassador Taylor, and when you see Colonel Vindman, they're this kind of backing of the post-war rules-based international order is really America as kind of this imperial power that has these protectorates, whether those protectorates are in NATO or Western Europe or in the Ukraine, in the Gulf, Persian Gulf, in the South China Sea, and in the Northwest Pacific, where America should have allies. And our founding fathers warned us about getting involved in these foreign situations are going growing around the world for monsters to slay. Understanding that we have to be engaged in the world. We're not retreatists, but we are a revolutionary power. On Thanksgiving Day, where it's really where the pilgrims came over here, which are the religious group that came to being a native Virginian, I also got to say, I think it was Jamestown first, but you know, I'll give my hat tip. What is it like in the United Kingdom when you look at us? You've now been here for many years on and off and Thanksgiving days. How do you guys look at this?
Thanksgiving is very strange for us. It kind of looks like a Christmas warm-up because we have our big arguments around the Christmas table. We don't have a Thanksgiving Day, and therefore everyone sort of gears up for the big arguments to be had at Christmas. And I recognize that this is probably going to be one of the most fractious Thanksgivings for American families.
So you believe that? We've had some guests on that have said, oh, I think people are tired of it, people are burned out from some of the pulsated thing. But your belief, like I am, when you get around the table, you're going to have some nice repartee, but eventually it's going to get to Trump.
Yeah. I think, look, it's not necessarily even the distinction in opinions. It's the firmness in the distinction of opinions that is going to come out around those Thanksgiving tables. You know, people might not have totally divergent opinions on the way they want the country to go. For instance, you know, we had this week, remember, a federal judge in the District of Columbia saying that the president is not a king. And for that reason, Don McGahn and
that was very powerful.
And these White House staff have to go up and actually testify.
This is
right?
about this is about having a blanket immunity from discussion, not even executive, kind of more than even executive privilege.
Yeah.
And this federal judge, and obviously this is going to go to appellate court, probably go to the Supreme Court. I thought the phrase was very powerful. He's not a king.
Of course it's very powerful. It's intended to be that way. And I think most people would accept the notion that the president of the United States is not a king and shouldn't have, you know, imperialistic kingly powers. But the arguments around the Thanksgiving tables are going to hinge on, well, they didn't care about that when Obama was in power. They didn't care about it, and they wouldn't have cared about it if Hillary Clinton was in power. They were able to act as sovereigns, as monarchs, to take full power, to take full executive authority under their control, and there was no push back. We also saw the same things eking out this week about the television coverage between from the broadcasters between the Clinton impeachment process and the Trump impeachment process. So much more has been thrown at this president, and I think that will bear.
What do you mean?
Out.
What do you mean about the TV coverage? Give me some granularity on that.
I will give you some granularity on it. And it was earlier this week leading the War Room website. Warroom.org website. The network spent 75 hours on the Trump impeachment process and barely bothered during the Clinton years. I think it amounted to something like 30 hours on NBC, 25 hours on CBS, ABC did 22.5 hours. But then during the Clinton administration, it was about a quarter of that dedicated time to the process, which is what we've seen played out. And I think a lot of people, especially a lot of older voters, will look at this and remember the Clinton proceedings especially and go, this is not a fair process. And you'll have some younger people around those tables at Thanksgiving who don't have the historical context to this and who just want to shriek about how this is an illegitimate president.
You know, one of the things we did on the 2016, the whole reason about bringing the women to the St. Louis debate is this theory I had early on in a guy named Aaron Klein, that many of the people really under 40 years old, but particularly under 30 years old, had no earthly idea about Bill Clinton and women. Mm. Had no earthly idea. When you talk about Bill Clinton, they really had no idea. They've kind of forgotten that history. I want to go to a couple of things on the polling as people sit around the Thanksgiving table. And this is our special Thanksgiving Day broadcast. I want to thank all the team at John Frederick's Radio Network and at America's Voice, the great crew there that's helping us put this on. Vanity Fair, and you know you got a problem when Vanity Fair is a very good political section if you're liberal. They sent up a flare this past week, and that flare was about polling that was in the morning console poll, the crosstabs that you went through. And a couple of those things, by a 3-to-1 margin, people believe that this is important. This is independence. By a 3-to-1 margin, they believe it's important to the D.C. elites and to the media elites, but it's not important to them. It's more important to those people than it is to them. By a 2-to-1 margin, they've merged all these investigations together. They can't disaggregate them. They think it's one continual, and that's kind of smart. They do understand it's the nullification process, although the media tries to break it up, it all looks like one.
And remember, they understand that this is much more important to the media and to other politicians than it is to their ordinary lives.
Well, that's what in the 11 things they let for independence, and my beloved border wall was rated higher, dead last in the 11 was impeachment. How does, when the people come around the table today, how will that be reinforced and send a negative signal to the Vanity Fairs and then back to the Democrats?
I think it's really interesting the headline they chose. They didn't bury the lead on this one. It is hard to read this as anything but a warning. New polling suggests Democrats' impeachment push could alienate key voters. I think everything's up for grabs around the Thanksgiving table. I think when people have walked through the historical context of this, especially Trump skeptics, especially independents, especially moderates, when they walked through all this, they will come to understand how the deck is stacked against the president in this regard. And this comes back to what you were saying earlier about this 6-point Guardian piece, right? One of the points was that Republicans say this is all a cabal out to get President Trump. Well, it's not a cabal out to get President Trump. It's a cabal out to get what the American people voted for in 2016.
This is the nullification process. And Greg, you saw that in Pennsylvania when we won. I mean, this is really, you see the yard signs, you see the deplorables. This is really, this is the key to it. This has been a nullification project from day one.
Yeah, exactly. In southwestern Pennsylvania and the northeastern part of the state, that is Trump country, and the blowback is definitely coming on strong there for the Democrats in this sham impeachment process.
Okay, you're listening to War Room Impeachment. It's Thanksgiving Day special. We're here to arm you the rest of the way. We've done enough gratitude. We're here to arm you the rest of the way for your Thanksgiving debates on the John Frederick Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network, America's Voice.News, and Newsmax TV. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, 28 November, Year of Our Lord, 2019. It's Thanksgiving Day, and this is our Thanksgiving Day special, episode 50. I want to thank the John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting Radio Network, America's Voice.News, the streaming service, and Newsmax TV, fastest growing cable news network in the country. Okay, before we go to The Guardian, I want to go back to Pennsylvania. Greg, tell me, you said something's going on. Tell me about Connor Lamb, what's happening there?
So in the Pittsburgh area, the suburbs of Pittsburgh, Monday, there was a protest, 100 people.
Wow, 100 people on a work day?
Yep, in the Mount Lebanon section of the Pittsburgh suburbs. Very liberal part of the district.
Wow.
A voter there.
100 people showed up?
Yep.
And what was the protest about? Was it about the impeachment process?
Specifically the impeachment process. And then there was a voter quoted at the event saying, "I've never been to a protest or rally in my life, but I am so sick of what's going on with Trump and how they have misrepresented him for 3 years. They have lied."
Raheem, this is the nullification project. Do you think, now this is a person that's never, this is like the rejuvenation of the Tea Party. I tell you, this is where the Democrats may have overplayed their hand. They may have initiated something here that they're going to regret.
Oh, I think without a shadow of a doubt, I think we're seeing that borne out from all the different congressmen and senators that we have and have had on this program over the course of the last few weeks. What are they all saying? People are now alive and alert to this. Look, it may not be the ordinary person out there who's tuning into every single impeachment testimony, but the people who have been political in the past, the people who are passionate about exercising their voting rights, the people who want this president to see through things like USMCA, they are getting hot under the collar about what is being done to this whole process. For them, it comes down to several things, right? Number one, where is the stress on my life? Where is my representative looking out for me? Where are the town halls where I get to talk about what I need to talk about? Why is Connor Lamb focusing on the removal of a duly elected president of the United States? It also comes down to the big policy propositions. They remember that in 2016, they voted for something, and they voted against something. They voted against the permanent political class. Remember, the slogan was "Drain the Swamp," right? They knew it was a positive affirmation of President Trump. It was not just a rejection of Hillary Clinton, but it was a rejection of everything Hillary Clinton stood for at the same time. And the third thing to all of this is, you know, when you look at all these guys, and we heard it earlier this week from the Michigan congresswoman, they have been saying for months, "Good on impeachment, we're big on impeachment, we're going to impeach this guy." A lot of them, remember, after the 2018 midterms, got up on their step stools at their rallies and said, "We're going to impeach this bleep." And now they're turning around and saying, "Well, we may actually just censure. We may not want to actually try and remove this president." So then people are asking their questions. So what has all this time and money and emotion been about?
Okay, I want to go into this. Up until 4 weeks ago, Nancy Pelosi, from the 24th of September all the way through, had a clear shot on goal. And you could see numbers start to move. The Rasmussen poll that was up on Drudge in that week that really alerted us, is what I call the fire bell in the night, had impeachment at the inquiry and removal from office at 52%. Then Matt Gaetz went down, broke the fever by going into the skiff and exposing this shift audition or the secret trials he was having downstairs with no visibility, no transparency. And that's where I think that's the high watermark. What has caused it to shift, though? As people are going to Thanksgiving dinners, we're going to get into this Guardian article here in a moment. But fundamentally, where are the numbers going? You've probably got a better hand on this than anybody. The polling you've seen, What is shifting here, and why is it shifting?
Well, it may have been a regretful error of the Democrats to shift narratives. We spoke about that earlier this week.
What was the shifting of the narratives?
Remember, they started this whole process with the quid pro quo line. They then focus grouped that and realized that, number one, nobody really knows what quid pro quo is. And the Latin is actually, the translation is so vague that even if you get into it, it's like, eh. So they looked for something a little bit more direct, a little bit more on the nose, and they ended up with bribery, right? Now, the problem with bribery,
of course, Nancy Pelosi was coming out and using bribery, 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 and all of her statements.
And then you saw the sort of Venn diagram of all the different phrases that are attached to bribery, blackmail, extortion, abuse of power, all of these things, right? But the problem that they suffered is, number one, with bribery, again, bribery may be in the Constitution, but it's not defined in the Constitution. So you either have to rely on a definition that has come forth sometime in the future.
But it does hardwire you into the Constitution more than extortion and more than quid pro quo. It's actually listed. And the debate about impeachment forever is talking about high crimes and misdemeanors. Yes. Here, people realize that treason and bribery are actually in before high crimes and misdemeanors. So they were trying to hardwire themselves into the document.
That's exactly right. But again, it doesn't work, and it hasn't played out that it's worked for them.
Because, why is that?
Because people can't identify what the bribery is.
They don't think a meeting in an office, in the Oval Office, raises to the levels of bribery.
Here's what people understand. That the president is elected to extract the best value from every single relationship for the country. And they understand
for the good of the American citizens and the nation.
That's what the president should be about. And they have experienced for so very long presidents that haven't been about it. They see this guy actually starting to pull on the thread of the permanent political class and trying to deliver on something like that. And they all lump in after him. You know, one of those Guardian pieces, bullet points in the piece that they wrote, the six things that Republicans are saying that aren't true, is the cabal argument that there is a permanent political class trying to bring this president down.
Well, let's a good segue to that. Let's talk about what the Guardian is and why people remember. And maybe we just talk about some data here before we get into it. But what we try to do on this show, and the reason we're having it, is give you 1 hour a day of concentrated analysis and intelligence on the impeachment process. But you can go to the website. You can go to warroom.org. Talk about the website. Why is the website important? And what are you trying to do and accomplish for people in their busy lives with the website?
Look, firstly and foremostly, the website is your go-to one-stop shop, warroom.org, for everything that's pertinent impeachment related. And we don't just flood it with pro-Trump messaging or anything like that. You need to understand the ordinary person, especially the people who are avowed in marching to that ballot box next year. They need to understand the ups and downs
of this. And who the 31 Democrats are going to look to, and the Senate's going to look to. The American people are the judges on this. The instruments are these representatives in the House for the impeachment process, and then the trial is the Senate. But it's public opinion and the American people that are going to decide this.
And on warroom.org, we're going to have in the next 24 hours over the Thanksgiving weekend, have the 31 profiles of all the districts and everything that people need to be paying attention to here. But it's also a place that provides rapid rebuttal arguments. When CNN comes out with a dodgy poll, we tell you why it's dodgy and why it doesn't add up.
And let's talk about the podcast. We're getting to The Guardian after the break here on War Room Impeachment. Talk about how people can get access to everything they need on the podcast.
warroom.org/podcast will give you all the options. Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes is the big one, of course, and being high on the iTunes charts is a big pride of place for a podcast. So we're very grateful for everybody that goes there, subscribes. It's free.
It's free.
We're never charging you a single cent for any of this.
Totally free.
And we'd be very grateful if you would leave us a pleasant review also. warroom.org/podcast.
Okay, we've got Raheem Kassam, Greg Manns, Jason Miller's on holiday. This is Steve Bannon with the Thanksgiving Day of War Room Impeachment. We're going to take a short commercial break. When we return to arm you for your Thanksgiving dinner, we're going to go through this Guardian analysis, this Guardian piece, step by step, so that you are the top person at your table to bring some rationality and some love. See you in a second.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam, War Room, Impeachment,
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
It's Thanksgiving Day. You're in the War Room with War Room Impeachment, 28 November, year of our Lord, 2019. episode 50 on your podcast. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network, AmericasVoice.news, one of the great streaming services out there, and Newsmax TV, the fastest growing news cable operation in the country, now passing 70 million homes. We want to thank Chris Ruddy and the team. Okay, we've got Raheem Kassam and Greg Manns. Greg was the communications director for the Pennsylvania 2016 victory. Raheem, the right-hand man of Nigel Farage and the great Brexit victory, which we're getting to a climax on December 12th on a general election in the United Kingdom. Jason Miller on holiday. Any other voices out there that you guys can discern in any of these other states that are actually saying, I think the Democrats are on the wrong track after I've seen this 2 weeks of hearings?
You know, on Tuesday, CNN aired this segment in the morning where they went to Pennsylvania and talked to the voters and tried to ascertain what people were thinking. And a lot of messages were coming through like, well, I might not like President Trump, but it doesn't seem right what they're doing, and I'd prefer that my congressmen and my senators actually focus on the job that I elected them to do. And that's something I think that's being picked up all over the place. Greg, you've seen it. You mentioned earlier on what happened outside the office of Conor Lamb. Tell us what's been happening in Minnesota.
So in Minnesota's 2nd congressional district, town hall was held there for Democrat Angie Craig. Voter there that attended is quoted in their local paper saying, I don't know what the reason is. It's not like Nixon years ago. With Trump, they wanted to impeach him from day one. Then he turned his attention to a local congresswoman. I voted for her, but I won't vote for her again.
Wow. This is
finish that line.
She's done.
Oh, my Lord.
She's done. Remember, you taught me not to step on the killer line.
Never step on the killer line. This is, I tell you, this is not what the Democrats wanted to hear going back to their districts. Yes. They wanted to hear that those hearings were amazing. This guy is a crook.
They thought they'd come home to parades.
Parades, exactly. And it's not a parade.
No, it's not a parade.
Okay, let's go to arm people for their, you're going to sit around a table. You're going to give thanks. You're going to have gratitude. You're going to tell old stories about the family. Eventually, it's going to turn to politics. About this Guardian. Tell us about the Guardian. Why is it important? And why will we single out, of all the stuff that's written, since we try to curate it down to people, why are we focused on the Guardian?
I think 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, the Guardian wasn't a major source of news in the United States. But as they've expanded their U.S. Bureau, they've actually made some pretty good hires, caught themselves in a number of fracas over the 2016 election period with their reporters getting body slammed here and there, I recall. And they have, you know, they've gained a name for themselves in the United States. And the Guardian's a very big paper.
What is the name?
I'll tell you, the Guardian newspaper in the United Kingdom is the paper of the public sector workers, the paper of the teachers, the paper of the social workers, the paper of the BBC, the paper that people in the National Health Service read. And that is coming to the same sort of thing.
It's the paper of record for the progressive left, the paper of record for maybe the big union movement over there.
Yeah, the progressive left, the big union movement, but also those sort of left-leaning moderates, left-leaning independents who perhaps have voted conservative or Republican in their life. Lifetimes, but they represent.
So it's just not labor; it's also liberal Democrats. It's the paper of the liberal Democrats.
Yeah,
it's had a huge influence here in the United States.
Yeah, and you know, they over the last 5 years, as I say, they've got a prolific number of links from the Drudge Report, and they worked very closely with the New York Times and all these guys on big breaking news stories.
ProPublica,
the Panama Papers, and all this stuff. You know, they have a very good investigative team there. You know, you and I have tangled with Guardian reporters
many times
for the last 10 years. They're not lightweights.
No, and they are in your grill. So here's what they did. They had not just, this was the big story they had, and we wanted to deconstruct it over the rest of the show. The screaming headline in The Guardian was, not just the facts, : Republicans' top 6 impeachment falsehoods, and that's a polite British way of saying lies.
Yes.
The Republicans' top 6 impeachment lies. Let's go through all 6. Just run through what all 6 are, and then we're going to come back and go through each one in depth.
Number 1, Trump is an anti-corruption champion. They say lie.
That's a lie.
Number 2, the witnesses are a cabal. That's a lie, according to them. Number 3, the Ukraine scheme was a foreign policy. Number 4,
that's a lie.
Trump saying no quid pro quo is exculpatory.
That's a lie.
Number 5, no evidence of a Ukraine scheme. And number 6, the whistleblower is missing.
So they're all, these are all falsehoods. This is all Republican falsehoods, and they've laid this out in pretty definitive fashion. Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. You're on the John Frederick Radio Network, on the Salem Broadcast Radio Network, on AmericasVoice.news, and on Newsmax TV. Also, you go to get the podcast, you go up to iTunes, you go up to Stitcher, yep. All the different sites. You hit subscribe. It's totally free. And tell them about warroom.org.
Warroom.org, your one-stop shop for everything impeachment related. Warroom.org/podcast will get you the podcast. Warroom.org/newsletter will get you the latest out of the War Room every single day.
Remember, we're 7 days a week, and we're here to get you the most condensed and intense information. Take a short commercial break. We'll return in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Thanksgiving Day special of War Room Impeachment. Stephen K. Bannon here with Raheem Kassam and Greg Manns. Okay, Raheem, we're kind of compressed for time.
Yep.
Let's go through. This is to get you ready for your Thanksgiving Day discussion, debate with the your fellow family, friends, colleagues. We're taking the Guardian newspaper that had the six lies of Trump and the Republicans about impeachment. Raheem, let it rip.
So the number one, let's start at the top. Trump is an anti-corruption champion. If anybody dares make the argument that President Trump was looking out for U.S. taxpayer money, $400 million thereof, apparently we're not allowed to make the argument that he was looking out.
No, they're going to say it was all Biden. He didn't care. Show me anywhere else he's talked about corruption.
Right. And the answer is this. Trump is obviously the president of the United States. The Secretary of State reports to the president of the United States. And the way that the United States has handled foreign aid, U.S. AID over the course of the last 3 years has been fundamentally different to what there's not just chucking buckets of cash out there anymore. It's simply not the case. You have to meet a certain standard. And that standard was abandoned under President Bush, predominantly more than anything, as the NGO class has expanded and money has been going to all of these things. I mean, to pro-abortion outfits.
This is about Biden as vice president. This is about exporting American crony capitalism to the most corrupt nation in Europe.
That's the second part of it. You know, President Trump isn't necessarily able, as previous presidents have been able to do. He doesn't think it's the United States' job to necessarily wag fingers at other countries and say, this is how we do it, and therefore this is how you do it. But hey, if we can stop exporting U.S. corruption, U.S. crony capitalism, if we can stop... Here's the only question that needs to be asked in answer to something like this. Which one of these two guys, Joe Biden or President Trump's family, took hundreds of millions of dollars from Ukraine? Was it the Trump family, or was it the Biden family that took millions from Ukraine? That puts in people's minds the very distinct difference between Trump acting on the interest of the American public versus the Bidens, who are acting in their selfish interest, their self-serving interest, to extract things from, as Ernst & Young calls it, the third most corrupt country in the world.
Okay, we're going to go to number two, but I want to say we have an article up on warroom.org. If you need a short brief before you go into that thing, just sneak it on your phone. Go to warroom.org.
Into your own war room.
Into your own war room again. Until you go to your own war room and get a short thing. Raheem and Greg's piece is up there about this. Let's go to number two.
The witnesses are a cabal. The Guardian basically...
You're saying the witnesses. This is Fiona Hill, Ambassador Taylor, Vindman.
Marie Yovanovitch, they say that these people aren't part of the same career political permanent class. In fact, they use the scare quotes around the words anonymous and unelected bureaucrats, also scare quotes around never Trumpers. Let's be very, very abundantly clear about who these people are. They go through the career foreign service track. They are taught that it is their policies, that it is the permanent political class's policies that are the ones that are to be implemented at a departmental level, at an ambassadorial level, at the embassy levels for the United States all around the world. They are taught specifically to fight against the interest of the United States on the world stage and to fight instead in the interest of the ideology of the permanent political class. So number one, you can make that case very clearly. Number two on this point, that the witnesses aren't a cabal as far as the Guardian is concerned. Look, it's no surprise that they all happen to know each other, right? It's no surprise that David Holmes's girlfriend sat at the same desk as, you know, another one of the witnesses.
What about the anonymous person, the whistleblower?
By
the way, we now know that the Navy captain that wrote the book on, and maybe the author of Anonymous, he's denying it softly but not hardly. His lawyer is the same lawyer for the whistleblower.
They have the same lawyers. They drink.
There's no coincidence.
They drink at the same bars. You know, there is an outright cabal.
What about Kent? What about Kent having the license plates, the vanity plates of for the Ukraine, and his daughter having a podcast?
Well, this is a major thing about, but it is sort of specific to Kent in this way. I mean, I certainly hope they don't all have free Crimea vanity plates, but George Kent and his wife, their two cars in their driveway have pro-Ukraine claims to Crimea license plates. And by the way, that's not to say that I don't think Crimea should be part of Ukraine.
Kent's an assistant secretary of state.
Right. He doesn't have a pro-Second Amendment or a pro-First Amendment vanity plate. He has a free Crimea vanity plate when he's driving around Arlington, right? This is a very, very strange thing, and it goes back to this this career political and bureaucratic class that The Guardian says doesn't exist. But if you go through The Guardian's opinion section on politics, you're not getting Stephen K. Bannon, right, in there. You're not getting Kellyanne Conway. You're not getting any of the, you know, David Bossy in there. You're getting the career permanent political classes.
Okay, what's number three?
Number three is the Ukraine scheme was foreign policy.
This is key.
This is key. They say this was a domestic political errand, not national security as it pertained to Ukraine.
They called us, by the way, they listened to the war room because they've taken all the points we make up and calling us liars.
They're not doing a very good job of it, though. I mean, you know, if I were them, I would have had a whole article on each one of these things and not try and summarize it as they have. Look, Ukraine scheme not being foreign policy is a manifest falsehood. And you know it's a manifest falsehood because there have been so many things that have gone on in Ukraine since 2013 that it's impossible for the president not to have a directly formulated foreign policy on this. It's impossible for him not to understand when the U.S. is giving $400 million. It's impossible not to understand the geopolitical ramifications of giving Javelin anti-tank missiles when Russia's knocking at the door, whether it's in the Donbass or whether it's in the Crimea or it's in the Black Sea. They understand the implications of that, and it's impossible not to have a foreign policy on this when you are repeatedly asked to talk to meet with, and to work with the new president who's elected on anti-corruption measures after the last president, Poroshenko, was kicked out, guess why, for promising to be anti-corruption and then turning out to be corrupt himself. It is impossible, and it beggars belief that The Guardian would think they can ram that stupidity down people's throats.
Let's go to four.
Trump saying no quid pro quo is exculpatory. They say that...
This is that famous phone call.
They say exactly. Because Trump said the words, no quid pro quo, I want nothing, I want nothing, I want Zelensky to do the right thing, I want Zelensky to do what he was elected to do or what he ran on. They say that him saying no quid pro quo to Sondland does not mean there was no misconduct.
Why?
They say that the particular statements as regarded Mayor Giuliani and others who were instructed to work on behalf, like Gordon Sondland, on behalf of the president, show that actually, while the president may have been saying one thing, he actually may have meant another. Well, guess what? You don't say that on a private call. You're trying to instruct.
What about the timing of the call that started that day that they start to announce this? What about your issues about the timing?
Well, look, they say that President Trump made this claim because he was caught in a lie, and therefore he released the aide and made this claim. But actually, they knew about the whistleblower 30 days, a full 30 days before. You don't panic 30 days later. You panic the day after.
Okay, you hang tight. We're going to take a short commercial break. War Room impeachment. We're going to return in just a moment with the rest of the beatdown of The Guardian by Raheem Kassam. Be back in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Thanksgiving Day special to get you ready for your Thanksgiving dinner. It's episode 50. I want to go right back to Raheem Kassam. Okay, that's good, but it's not great. Here's the reason. He made the call, and what they're arguing is that something happened right before him to trigger the call. How do you push back on that? Walk us through what the timeline is and what's the pushback.
So what we're talking about here is when President Trump spoke with Ambassador Sondland and said, I want nothing, I want nothing, I want no quid pro quo, tell Zelensky to do the right thing. The Guardian and playing devil's advocate here in the war room, Stephen K. Bannon, are making the case that later that day, the House Foreign Affairs Intelligence and Oversight Committees, led by Democrats, announced an investigation into Giuliani's efforts in Ukraine and the administration's decision to halt.
But the administration knew about that beforehand. They knew that was going to be an announcement.
Well, that's the contention.
So how do you justify it?
The justification is very, very simple. President Trump hears that the House, that these committees are going to investigate the halting of aid, and President Trump knows himself that he hasn't asked for anything in response to this aid. He wants to call the person that he's spoken to, in this case Ambassador Sondland, and make very clear that he never asked for anything ever. He said he wanted no quid pro quo. Remember, the whole timeline that takes us up to this event is people presuming and inferring, as Bill Taylor did in his testimony, as Fiona Hill said, as Ambassador Sondland said, as George Kent said. None of them ever heard the president ever say he wanted something in return. It was a lot of presumption. There was a lot of Chinese whispers, right? And then it comes out and President Trump hears they're talking about this. I never said that.
This is a big one. So we got 2 minutes to do 5 and 6. Hit me.
Jumps on the phone to Sondland and says, I never said that. I want nothing. Number five. No evidence of a Ukraine scheme is the other. Now, this is a bit of a straw man as far as The Guardian is concerned. This isn't something that the Republicans are necessarily saying themselves, but it's something I think The Guardian wishes Republicans were saying more. It is that nothing untoward or nothing strange happened in Ukraine.
Real quick,
just
six.
Didn't exist. Six. And number six, the whistleblower is missing. Now, I think the whistleblower is a pretty big part of this whole thing.
Why?
And the whistleblower needs to be heard from. Because, number one, you face your accusers. In any non-banana republic, you get to face your accusers. Number two, the whistleblower very heavily tied to Biden, heavily tied to the former people on the NSC, heavily tied to Barack Obama. And it makes common sense that for Adam Schiff to be the front line of this, it's a very terrible thing. It undermines the whole thing. And that's why Democrats out there in these swing districts don't buy it.
Okay, I want you to go to warroom.org. You can get all this information, the complete analysis, get ready for your Thanksgiving Day. I want to thank everybody, all the listeners. The show's has blown up because of you. We're here 7 days a week until the day after Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States, is acquitted. This is War Room Impeachment from the Breitbart Embassy on the Salem Radio Network, the John Fredericks Radio Network, the America's Voice.news, and Newsmax TV, the fastest growing cable channel in the world. And also, how do you get it on podcast?
warroom.org/podcast. Steve, I wanted to know what you're thankful for.
I'm thankful for being a citizen of the United States of America, and I'm thankful that the young people in Hong Kong showed the way for populism and freedom. We've got a lot to be thankful for this holiday season, including the fact that Donald J. Trump is finally focused.